Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course, or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
Carvana's so easy, just a click, and we've got ourselves a car. See?
So many cars. That's a clicktastic inventory.
And check out the financing options. Payments to fit our budget. I mean, that's
Clickonomics 101.
Delivery to our door?
Just a hop, skip, and a click away.
And bought.
No better feeling than when everything just clicks. Buy your car today on Carvana. Delivery fees may apply.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to One Nation. I'm Brian Kilmeade. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. It's going to end strong. Coming up with tonight's show, got Mayor Eric Johnson of Dallas. It's going to be great. Why did he switch from Democrat to Republican? And what's his message to New Yorkers? And Congressman Mike Lawler. Speaking of New Yorkers, he's trying to make America affordable again and make his city, his district, affordable again. We're going to get his game plan. And I had a chance to go to Germany and have meet with some of the most impressive people America has to offer. I went over there to go to the Army base over right there in Wiesbaden. You're going to love the inside story of what's really going on behind the scenes and be especially proud. But first, the fastest, most impactful monologue in America. You know, for both fans and critics, no one can deny that this administration is one of action and constant motion. To me, I see progress. I see a game plan. But as critics choose to see chaos.
CNN's Elena Treen is at the White House with more on this chaos, confusion.
This is about causing mass chaos.
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 He's unleashing chaos on the American people.
Donald Trump wants this chaos. He wants confusion.
Yeah, exactly. I see it differently. Maybe you do, too. I think it's calculated. And it's all focused on one thing, China. Now, it's not unusual for President Trump to talk about China as the number one threat to America.
China-centric. I wouldn't want it if I was China either.
Leading China by a lot.
China-centric.
And we're doing great against China.
We have a deal with China.
The people that are fighting me are people that want China to do well. And we're doing great against China.
Yes, but this time around, he's changing his approach. It is indirect, and it might be more effective. I know he hasn't mentioned them much lately, but the thing is, you don't have to say China to act against China. For example, Venezuela. 12,000 miles away from us. How does that impact them? Look at oil, for starters. China is Venezuela's largest buyer of crude oil, minerals, gold. Since Maduro's capture, the number of oil tankers departing Venezuela for China has plummeted and is no longer sold for bargain basement prices. A sycophant ally lost. Look at Panama. China's control of the canal being brought to a close, ending their ability to shut us off from either ocean at any time, minimizing their influence in our backyard. And speaking of our backyard, there's Cuba, known for providing China with a strategic foothold, cyber ears listening to America, 90 miles off our shore, while China, in turn, offers up crucial economic aid for all that access. Now, I don't know if you can hear the heavy breathing, but Cuba is on a respirator. When that plug is pulled, look for the backwards island to come under our influence. China out. South America isn't Trump's only strategic way to take on the superpower. Let's head up north. How about to Greenland? The bid to buy it may be more strategic than you think. The unprotected island has a path to the Arctic, rare earth minerals, and, drumroll please, oil. Trump isn't taking any chances. He's not looking for a deal. He's looking for a deal. He's not looking for an invasion. And he wants to make sure China doesn't get in there at all. In the Middle East, Yes, Iran is on the cusp of a revolution. But more importantly, they are a source to sell China deeply discounted oil. They are a nation who breaks world sanctions in exchange for Iran's natural resources. If they fall, yes, this Iranian government, China feels it in the solar plexus. Pay attention, world. He is not playing global cop. He is playing America first, which is always keeping our enemy slash rival front and center in his decisions. Just because we're not flooding the Pacific with our armada, naval armada, doesn't mean he's not about defending the Pacific Ocean. This is not chaos. It's called a well-constructed, executed plan. I see it a major success so far. You know, there is one point of leverage that China has, and that is rare earth. But Trump is already working that out. Did you notice? He's calling together a meeting of all our allies, all hands on deck approach to mining and refining to give us all back control of our weapons, our phones, our grids, and electric cars. So while people think Trump's tactics can be chaotic, can be unorganized, in reality, it's really just the opposite. There is time to confront. There is a time to contain. And by going after our problems around the world, we're actually suddenly containing and confronting our number one challenge all at the same time. And you know who realizes that? China. He's not making it easy for them to retaliate by getting into a war of words over imposing tariffs. That happened 9 months ago. He's just trying to beat them everywhere and every place they look. Joining us now to expand on this, a guy part of that game plan, Oklahoma Senator. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen. Senator Mullen, you've heard people accuse the president of chaos. I see a plan. You know him personally when the cameras are away. Is there a plan?
Yes, absolutely, Brian. Look, what the president is doing here is for years we've been accused of playing checkers, why China's playing chess. The president has completely taken the chessboard off and saying we're not even playing games anymore. And let's look back at what he first did. When he went in and he started redoing the tariffs and saying you're not taking advantage of us anymore. If you want to do business inside the United States, you're going to pay a price. If you're going to steal our jobs, you're going to pay a price. If you're going to try to undercut us, we're going to go after those countries and we're going to put sanctions on them. What that was a direct hit to the Belt and Road Initiative. And mind you, the Belt and Road Initiative that China had in place was to cause all roads to lead in and out of China, which is a huge economic threat to the United States and the rest of the world. And then you start seeing what he's doing right now with Venezuela. If Venezuela was just playing par, just being a good neighbor, we would be perfectly okay with it. The problem was is that Venezuela was a drug cartel, and a lot of the precursors for fentanyl was flowing through Venezuela. And then at the same time, Venezuela was selling 400,000 barrels of oil a day on the black market to China, which means that they were paying about 30 cents on the dollar less than what the real price is. And then you see what's happening in Iran right now. Now, that wasn't necessarily our direct influence there, but we are supporting the Iranian people to get their country back and get rid of the Ayatollah and the murderous regime there. But they were also selling oil to China at a 30% discount at 1.4 million barrels a day. So now there's 1.8 million barrels less.
Right.
Russia has got sanctions on them. They're not able to do it. With all that being said, if China's only got about 90 days of supply of this cheap oil, soon as the cheap oil leaves, they're going to have a 30% increase on production, because you cannot make a product or deliver a product without figuring in the cost of energy. So it's putting a huge strain, and President Trump has outflanked China every step of the way, Brian.
And I'm going to add something else. You guys voted on a bipartisan way, over 80 votes in the Senate, to put secondary sanctions on every nation that buys oil from Russia. If you put that into play, that will really slam China, Russia, Turkey, and Brazil.
And we could possibly be dealing with that the last week of this month, if not the second week of February.
Great. I want to talk about our allies, because I had a chance, as you know, to go over to Germany, meet with our fantastic men and women who are serving on a daily basis and really impressed with their strategy. The other thing I'm impressed with is the loyalty from our allies. They are really motivated to strengthen NATO. I had a chance to talk to a German major general. Here's what he said that he discovered in being with Americans every day.
It's really amazing, especially when you're looking that they are luckily the only superpower which is able to project forces globally. And to see it here in the European theater, how they can make it, how they manage it, this is really amazing. Very clear, very focused on that we have to defend the territory of the alliance, and that we are close allies throughout the transatlantic partnership, which is that what I would say guarantees our freedom, our democracy, what we've had in the past decades.
And he goes on that the Germans have doubled their defense budget. All the Baltic nations have gone over the threshold necessary for NATO. Poland is putting together an arsenal, percentage of GDP higher than anybody else, including us. The NATO allies finally get it. Senator, your thoughts.
Well, when the president of the United States leads from the front and he emboldens peace through strength, it emboldens other people to follow, because there's always going to be a world power. As long as we've studied history, there's always been a world power. People want the United States because, unlike any other world power, we're not conquerors. We're there to support, to be able to bring peace and democracy around the world and allow people to have the freedom of choice, because we believe in that everybody has the right, given by God, of freedom if you choose to. So people were hungry for a leader, and President Trump came in at a perfect time to do so. Now, on a different note, Brian, we really need to talk about your deadlift. I saw that was your first time to ever do a deadlift.
Yeah.
Tell me how sore your back was.
Well, you know what? That's the thing. I have bad lower back, so they said stay away from it. The guys on the base said just the opposite. You have to do a deadlift. And it's a matter of, and they were going, I said, all right, guys, this guy was my height, only 220 of solid muscle. I'll take his advice. Real quick on Greenland and our allies. We got Germans, the British, the Swedes. They're all putting like two dozen guys in there to keep us away. Would you like to see a deal done there? This seems to be built for a Donald Trump-style deal rather than ownership.
Well, let's talk about what they're really doing. They are trying to keep us away, but they're trying to keep us away by trying to strengthen the area, because NATO and the United States has been warning Denmark for 20 years that say, hey, you need to get Russia and China out of your backyard. They're mapping the seas. They're using it for an aggressive position, and they're starting to jam up the shipping lines. So what they're doing is they're saying, hey, look, guys, hey, United States, we've got it. But they're a little Johnny-come-lately. What the president has been saying about Greenland is, look, if NATO wants us to invest billions of the United States taxpayer dollars to shore up that shipping lane, to shore up the NATO response for air defense, then we should have the ownership of that land, and we should allow the people of Greenland to make that decision. And by the way, we're okay with purchasing it if we need to, but we can't ask the United States to be the guard of the entire world and invest billions of dollars without it being on our own soil, because Greenland plays as important part to our east flank of the United States as Alaska does to our west flank.
And it was explained to me about the Golden Dome. We need it. And I think we'll get cooperation, because
Finch
scared the heck out of him. The president scared the heck out of him to this point. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, always great. It's an exciting time. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Brian.
We will take every opportunity to remind New Yorkers across the city of the sanctuary city policies that we have in place here in New York City.
Here we go again. The showdown over sanctuary city funding. New York City Mayor Zohran Mamdani not only defended the city's sanctuary city status, but he also vowed to fight President Trump, who he texts with twice a week, February 1st deadline to halt the federal funds to sanctuary cities and states, which he pledged to do. So my next guest declared his city to be a, get this, sanctuary city from socialisms like Mamdani. Joining us right now is the mayor of Dallas. He's the former Democrat turned Republican, and he's very conservative, and he wants to welcome big business to Dallas because it seems to be possibly not welcome in New York. Mr. Mayor, why are you okay? Why are you okay not being a sanctuary city? And what's your reaction to them doubling down in New York and elsewhere?
Well, we support law enforcement here in Dallas. We support law and order. It's something I think is very important. I don't think you can have a city if you don't have safety. And so I don't understand the impulse that some of these Democrat mayors have to embrace lawlessness, frankly, and to be preaching just to be blunt, not cooperating with any law enforcement agencies that are trying to help keep your residents safe. So to the extent that you want to define a sanctuary city as a city that is an open defiance or openly hostile to law enforcement, including ICE.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like New York's going to budge. And Mayor Eric Johnson's Dallas, you're not going to see what's happening in Minneapolis. I mean, what is your reaction to what's happening there? You have local law enforcement just not even arresting anyone, even though we see the destruction of FBI cars, the stealing of their guns, the stealing of the paperwork, the attack on officers. How did things get so bad? And what do you think about when you see this?
Well, look, first and foremost, it's just it's a tragedy what's happening in Minnesota and Minneapolis. And we need to lower the temperature there. But how do we do that? And the answer is the rhetoric has to stop. The anti-law enforcement rhetoric just has to stop. Mm-hmm. And the second thing we have to do is we actually, we have to make sure that we are supporting law enforcement in the exercising of their duties and doing their job. And the folks are actually making it hard for them to actually engage right. in the law enforcement activities. And that's getting people hurt.
But what you do see is things, people and businesses moving to Dallas. In fact, in a Wall Street Journal editorial, you wrote what was already a trickle is going to turn into a flood of individuals and companies who have called New York home for a long time and moving to Dallas. So you guys are building your own mini Wall Street there. Do you believe it's only going to get bigger once people see who this mayor really is? And the fact is, he doesn't like capitalism. He doesn't think billionaires should exist.
Dallas was already moving in the direction of being a hub for financial services before the new mayor of New York was elected, and it's just going to accelerate now. It's already accelerating. I'm already getting the phone calls. We're already having more conversations than we've ever had before, and more interest in moving to Dallas by New York-based financial firms. So, the answer is there is a flood and an avalanche of interest in being where I think people who do this for a living, folks in the financial services industry, understand that the future of capitalism in this country is moving west. And it appears to be that New York wants to be the heartbeat of socialism in the United States. And that appears to be the direction it's going. But down here in Dallas, right. I can tell you we embrace business, we embrace capitalism, we embrace corporations who employ folks and who are actually pillars of our communities.
In an editorial, when talking about politics, there's an op-ed I think might have got your attention as a former Democrat. David Plouffe, who got Obama elected twice, is urging Democrats to change course. He writes, the headline is, David Plouffe says Democrats will lose in 28 unless they change course right now. He writes, the Democrat Party still is in a crisis despite their success in 2025 and needs to overhaul their broken brand and add a fresh slate of fresh agenda, fresh ideas to win races in hostile territory. You decided to switch parties because you didn't like the direction of the party. Do you think this party is ready to listen to David Plouffe?
I don't know if they're ready to listen or not, to be honest with you. I'm not really privy to those conversations anymore. I'm not really welcome at their gatherings anymore. But I will tell you this. David Plouffe is right. The reasons why I left the Democrat Party myself are the reasons that he's concerned that Democrats are going to have a hard time in 2028. Now, what they have going for them is that my party, the Republican Party, struggles a bit when Donald Trump himself isn't on the ballot, and he won't be on the ballot in 2028. But as far as the issues are concerned, Democrats are losing normal folks. Everyday folks are concerned about law and order. They're concerned about the economy. They're concerned about jobs. And Democrats are increasingly becoming, and really are at this point, if we're just going to be honest about it, an anti-law enforcement and an anti-capitalism party. They are pro-socialism, and they're for, frankly, lawlessness and disorder. And so I think everyday normal folks are going to continue to migrate away from the Democrat Party the way I did. And so I think David Plouffe is right. He's talking about the Democrats need to focus more on hiring police officers and first responders. He's right about that. He's talking about they need to focus on affordability. But if you think about what he actually said, how they should do it, it's what I've been saying for a long time myself and couldn't get any audience in the Democrat Party. But Republicans understand this, focusing on the supply side of things when it comes to housing. We can't government build our way to affordability and housing. We can't rent control our way to affordability and housing, despite what the mayor of New York is saying. The way we lower prices on in the housing market is to build more of it.
Yeah, I just, anybody who predicts exactly what's going to happen is really has, you know, they have no idea, because there's so many different variables taking place. And also, who's going to come to the issues, not only know the issues, but have solutions. Knowing think affordability is a problem is one thing. How you fix it is how you should vote, if that person answers your question correctly. Mr. Mayor, thanks so much. Great to see you.
Great to be here. Thanks so much.
Okay, see you again soon. Meanwhile, coming up, I got an inside look at the next generation of warfighting abroad as I go inside the main army hub in all of Europe. You don't want to miss it. And next, Donald Trump's top three strategies to make America affordable again. Congressman Mike Lawler answers the call. And be sure to catch me coming up, I can't believe it, Fort Myers, Florida, February 14th, streamed on Fox Nation. Make sure you get tickets, BrianKilmeade.com, on Valentine's Day. And then Reno, Nevada, May 30th. Don't move. So affordability is front and center right now for the Trump administration and for you. Tonight, we break down President Trump's three-pronged plan to ease the squeeze on American families. First, the $200 billion mortgage bond buying push aimed at pushing lower rates, very popular. Second, a push for portable mortgages, allowing homeowners to carry their low interest rates that they have right now and move that with them to another house. A lot of people think it'll unfreeze the market. And third, a proposal to temporarily cap credit card interest rate at 10%, igniting a debate over whether caps help consumers or restrict access to credit. Joining us right now to break this all down with us, a guy who knows a little bit about everything and a lot about stuff, too, Congressman Mike Lawler, who's also on the Foreign Affairs Committee. Congressman, welcome back. You agree that affordability should be top of the agenda for you and your party, right?
No question, Brian, and thanks for having me. Affordability is the number one issue. When you talk about housing, health care, energy costs, taxes, these are the issues the American people want us to focus on. It's why we produced the single largest tax cut in American history last year, and people will see the benefits of that when they go to file this April. But we have to tackle the issue of housing. We have to tackle the issue of health care. That is primarily what I am focused on, and frankly, what the president has been talking about, and why we need to really advance legislation to address these issues.
Right. Okay. So some of the things he's brought up, I love the fact that through an executive order, he's stopping those big companies from buying single family homes. The mortgage bond buyback program to lower interest rates. Really smart guys in investments think the $200 billion invested there will help. Do you?
Yes, certainly. Look, at the end of the day, for the economy to flourish, we need access to capital. And I think when you look at some of the regs that the administration has been tackling, the whole focus of what we are doing in Congress with respect to our Financial Services Committee, we are focused on increasing access to capital, lending through our community banks. We have a big package of bills focused on how to actually put capital in the hands of small businesses, of home buyers, of builders and contractors who want to create more housing. These are the issues that matter. So when you look at ways to get more capital into the hands of the American people, that's how the economy is going to grow.
And we think people are going to get a big tax return if you just look at the stats. And the one thing you're not thrilled with is capping credit card interest rates, which are so astronomical, they seem ridiculous, at 10%. You don't think that's going to help. Why?
Look, I think we have to tackle the issue of credit card interest rates. They are absurdly high. But putting an arbitrary cap in it, my concern is what you're going to end up doing is limiting the flow of credit to, frankly, Americans that need it most. And so we have to find the balance on that. The other thing I would say, you know, when you look at credit cards, a lot of Americans have relied on these incentive programs that come with these credit cards. So the rewards points, you know, I stay at a lot of Marriott's, and so you get a lot of Marriott rewards points. These programs have been helpful to a lot of families to be able to purchase other things or to be able to afford trips, et cetera. So I think you have to find the balance here. I think we have to work with the credit card companies to bring down their interest rates. But again, a lot of Americans are relying on credit. And so if you seize up the credit market, that actually will have a negative impact on availability to most Americans.
The president finally released the great health care plan. Some of the things in it, his insurance ideas, his direct payments to patients, these health care accounts. Instead of giving money to the health care companies, which the subsidies did, he wants to give it right to people in health savings accounts. Those are some of the things, and we're seeing at home some of the bullet points in his plan. Do you think this is something that could work its way through the House and Senate and pass?
I do, Brian. I was with the president on Friday for the rollout of this plan, along with the Rural Health Transformation Fund. And we talked extensively about the issue of health care affordability and how to actually tackle it. I think the president's spot on when he's talking about most favored nation status when it comes to the pharmaceutical industry and Americans paying the same price as the lowest country around the globe.
Right.
We see European price controls have skyrocketed American pharmaceutical costs, and that needs to change. The president's right to tackle that. Mm-hmm. He's right to focus on HSA expansion and putting the money in the pockets of the American people to purchase as opposed to the insurance companies.
Real quick, there's a Wall Street Journal headline I thought about you because you're working hard to get those subsidies extended. You're in a battleground district in a blue state, and you say, let's just extend it so people don't feel the pain. But the headline in the Wall Street Journal was kind of interesting because they're seeing right now from the 24 million people that signed up for Obamacare in 2025. So far in 26, they're within 1.4 million of that announced, from 24.2 to 22.8. They said it was going to be 18.4 and people couldn't afford it. Do you believe that maybe this was overstated by Democrats who use this as an excuse to shut down the government and might again?
Well, they certainly were absurd in using this as the issue to shut the government down. But the issue of healthcare affordability is one that impacts everyone. And so my approach has been to say, look, we have to address the short-term extension of the enhanced premium tax credit with reforms. I want reforms. We want income limits. We want insurance reforms. We want PBM reform, HSA expansion, and we want to eliminate zero premium plans. And we need to tackle the larger healthcare issue. The president is right to focus on that with the great healthcare plan. We need to meld this together, get a bipartisan deal, and get it done so that we actually reduce healthcare costs across the United States.
All right, Mike. Always great to see you, Congressman. Best of luck. I know it's a battle every election season, but you're up for it. You raised a ton of money already. Congressman Mike Lowe, thank you. Meanwhile, don't move. Lauren Simonetti is here with the media moments that matter to her and hopefully to you.
Welcome to Fox News Live. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer in New York. Tensions continue to flare between the U.S. and Iran. Iran's president warning any aggression against the country's supreme leader will be considered an all-out war. This comes a day after President Trump called for new leadership in Tehran. Trump is weighing both military and non-military options following Iran's brutal crackdown on protesters. At least 5,000 people have reportedly been killed during weeks of unrest. Iran also now hinting it may move forward with executions of people arrested. Ukraine and the U.S. meeting once again this weekend in an effort to reach a deal to end the war with Russia. Talks focused on security guarantees and a post-war recovery plan for Ukraine. Talks are expected to continue this week at the World Economic Forum in Switzerland. Any deal would still need, of course, Russia to sign off. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer. Back to One Nation with Brian Kilmeade.
Media moments that matter.
All right, that's right. It's your fan favorite. I know it's your favorite on One Nation. This week, I gave the VCR and the TV guide and all my cables and my cord and my tape stock, too, for the first time, and I trusted her, Business correspondent Lauren Simonetti.
Now, Lauren, hello.
I told you to tape everything and come up with three segments for America.
I did, I think, a good job.
Really?
Are you ready to start?
Let's start.
Okay. So under pressure from Ben Shapiro, conservative commentator, he goes on the Gavin Newsom podcast, and he basically shows that Gavin Newsom is a chameleon. Gavin did not expect this line of questioning from Ben Shapiro when they were talking about the fatal ICE shooting that happened, you know, Renee Good, a protester in Minnesota,
right,
who tried to ram an ICE agent with her car. Listen to what Ben asked Gavin. Watch.
Your press office tweeted out that it was state-sponsored terrorism, which, I mean, yeah. Governor, I do have to ask you about that. Yeah. That sort of thing makes our politics worse.
Yeah.
I mean, it does.
Yeah.
I mean, our ICE officers obviously are not terrorists.
Yeah.
A tragic situation is not state-sponsored terrorism.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
So he admits it. He thinks it's fair that it was wrong for his press office to do that.
Does his press team know that he thinks that? Do you believe Gavin Newsom?
Well, the thing is, someone's been working his Twitter feed to be anti-Trump, and he feels as though he's getting traction. So he thought, okay, I'm going to go run with Governor Walz, who he praised after he caught up in a scandal, refused to run again. So this guy, it's the second time. He kind of said he was wrong, but he didn't come out and say, you know, in retrospect, I was wrong. It's always that subtlety. Let's keep it in Hollywood with the next topic.
Okay, well, he certainly is Hollywood to me, and so is comedian Nikki Glaser. She says she scrapped anti-Trump and anti-ICE jokes from the Globes because they're not funny. Here's her quote. Quote, it's not funny. I was going to come in at some point and say I'm hearing from the bar that we're out of ice. And, you know, we don't really need ice. And actually, I hate ice. It just felt like, oh, even that's just being too trivial. That's what it felt like. This isn't even that anymore. It's hard to strike the right tone.
Right. So she admits it. She admits it's you don't want to get political, especially up top.
You want to be sharp, but you don't want to be insensitive.
Yeah.
And you don't want to alienate half the country. And then she showed us the jokes that made the cutting floor. Watch this.
Oh, Howard Stern. Okay.
Everyone's concerned about AI. Tilly Norwood is the first star to be completely generated by AI and somehow has still been sexually assaulted by three different studio execs. Leo, why are you always squinting? I mean, I assume it's to read your girlfriend's ID, just making sure that the year starts with a two. Brad Pitt is nominated for his role in F1 tonight. See, that's what I love about Hollywood. When a man turns 60, he gets to play a race car driver. Meanwhile, after 35, every role for a woman is tired mom who hates her life.
I think that's funny.
I like those jokes. Both.
Yeah, that was great.
I didn't make you're not insulting anybody but the actors, and they came there to get roasted, right?
Absolutely. Now, the one streaming show that I've watched every episode.
So good. Landman. It hilariously crushes The View without even trying. Watch this.
You're just going to sit there and not complain about anything? I might watch that View later. You're right. They're pretty funny. I don't think they're trying to be funny, but they are.
So that's all you're going to do?
I think I got physical therapy this afternoon.
Taylor Sheridan nails it again. You know, I love how he lives in Texas. He says he's not political, but he works in Hollywood and with Hollywood. And he just shows them how the rest of the country really thinks.
And you know, Lauren, he's too big to cancel. So
that's like the number one streaming show.
And he's the number one producer. I think he's even bigger than Paramount. I think he's moved on. Lauren, thanks so much for coming down. I like your three choices. Good job.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. And I will see you soon. See you in the halls. We have the same early shift. Meanwhile, as the country tackles major conflicts across the globe, I had a chance to meet with some brave troops keeping our world safe at America's main army hub over in Europe. A behind-the-scenes look next. And I want to share some exciting news. Launching a brand-new YouTube channel is going to be starting on Monday. Check it out. And that's the address. More in One Nation in a moment. So at the heart of the U.S. Army's presence in Europe sits Clay Casern Army Base, right there. An operational center built on history, focused on the future. So I had a chance to go behind the scenes with four-star General Christopher Donahue and experience firsthand how the Army continues to evolve while honoring its past. Take a look.
Welcome back, everybody. It's kind of a raucous here at the American Forces Radio Studios.
Right here is the globe off of Hitler's desk.
Get out of here. Put this down?
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like I went to a town instead of a base.
You're doing a fantastic job.
7-hour flight. And I'm at the headquarters of the U.S. Army Europe and Africa. So much action here. I'm going to meet a four-star general, and then it was just two stars, Chris Donahue, and they get a chance to spend a day with the men and women who serve and find out what's going on. After all, there's a war just 650 miles away. Let's go. So, General, this is where you work every day.
This is where we work, and, you know, we're in a great environment right now. We're unchained. But, you know, this organization has incredible history. Right here is the globe off of Hitler's desk.
Get out right? of here.
It reminds us of where this headquarters started and what we have to do every day.
Now, this is an office. This is more like a, feels like a command center more than an office.
It is. Right? We can do everything we need to out here.
What is your job?
I'm the Army Component Commander for all of Europe, all of Africa, and also for NATO. So, you know, obviously this is a land-centric fight, so I would argue this is, you know, one of the best jobs anyone can have in the world.
You got a Ukraine 650 miles away, and you have breaches of the borders of a lot of our NATO allies. When you talk about the men and women here, how does it feel like you're almost in a war footing?
We are developing the right way to fight anywhere in the world, a global capability that can go anywhere, and make sure that we're now, all these unmanned systems that you're seeing out there, how do you harness that? And right now it seems like it's a very defensive fight going on everywhere, and that's true. We have to turn it into an offensive capability. And everyone in the military is working on it, but we are in a unique position where we can drive that even faster.
You cannot have a full day on an Army base like this and not train, do some PT. All right, so you've customized a workout for me, or am I just jumping into something you do every day?
Jumping in, we do it for the soldiers every day, and so right. I would advise you putting that down. Next.
Put this down?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ready, set, and go.
What made you join?
I've always had a desire to be in the military, and I've had a lot of pride for our country.
What do you get out of it?
A sense of accomplishment. I'm from a small little town in Arkansas, and I never thought I'd be half the places I've been and seeing the things I've done.
Now that you're cleaned up, we brought you into the heartbeat of the command. This is how we track operations, and we're ready to respond to crisis or conflict across 104 countries.
That's a live motion map, like tracking drones, correct?
Yes, sir. So that's tracking drones. That's tracking news headlines about drones. It's tracking friendly unit locations of NATO allies and U.S. forces, sir.
Our responsibility here is to ensure that the authentic events that are happening on the ground are being reported to our soldiers and sailors here in theaters.
If I said AI was going to be dominating your career 4 years ago, you're like, I don't think so.
Absolutely.
But it is right now.
It is 100%. Yeah. Anything that we see here is all ran through AI, right? Helps us gauge the situation better.
Colonel, that is so impressive, knowing also that you're monitoring this 24 hours a day.
Yeah, Brian, you only saw the unclassified portion of this?
Wait, that was unclassified.
Yeah, wait till you see what happens after we leave here on the screen.
So they dimmed some screens because I'm here.
That's right.
This is a place of innovation. It's not of mass production. What they come up with here, they bring to the battlefield rapidly. What are you working on?
Currently, I am 3D printing additional parts for the wing sections of our unmanned aerial system.
When you guys come up and innovate something cutting edge, something brand new, how soon can you get it to the battlefield?
A lot of this can be done within less than a day.
Wow.
So here at the base in Germany, you got to think about what's happening now, but also what's happened here in the past. And with me right now is Michael Claus. He's a head of history.
So some of the really cool things that happened here include things like the Berlin Airlift. The Berlin Airlift was organized right here in the Frankfurt area, you know, with the aircraft launching to sustain the forces that were in Berlin.
Because the Soviets were starving them out.
You can't talk about, you know, U.S. Army, Europe, and Africa without Elvis. Elvis was stationed in Bad Nauheim with the 3rd Armored Division. He was stationed here as a cavalry scout, so he would, you know, do reconnaissance and sneak around and work with our allied partners.
Is it true that Priscilla's dad was here and where he first met his future wife?
Well, that I can't confirm, but, you know.
But that is the story that's going around.
That's always the story.
There's one thing when you think about Germany and you think about World War II, you think about the Cold War that followed, and then
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
We actually have a piece and one of the original border stones, which demarcated east from west. This was a border stone that would mark the DDR, the Deutsche Demokratische Republik, and then a fragment of the actual Berlin Wall, which was the Berlin Wall started going in 1961.
Here we are at the Wiesbaden Army Airfield. I leave Germany, heading to Poland to see the men and women who are keeping our the war machine going in case it gets bigger or the conflict grows. The only thing you told me about today is we're going to Poland and you're going to be able to shoot a tank.
That's right, Brian. You're going to need to know bases right now.
Right.
So today we're going to take you out to NATO's eastern flank to Poland. We're going to fire an M1 Abrams main battle tank. We're going to show you some drones and kind of the future of warfare.
You can plan for a lot of things in this life, and you can try to affect a lot of things, but you can't affect the weather. Colonel Weissman, we got into Poland. The weather stopped us from landing. Now what?
We go to plan B, Brian.
There's a plan B?
There's always a plan B.
Just know, man, I appreciate Gavin here.
Hey, Mr. President, it's Brian. I'm here with the European and African Command, General Donahue's unit over here.
You're doing a fantastic job. Your reputation is great. Next year, I'm increasing the military spending to $1.5 trillion, which is, it's now at a trillion. Nobody got close to that, but it was for me. We need it. You know, we have a lot of threats. And when they saw what we did in Venezuela, everybody was watching. When they saw what we did in Venezuela, they said, whoa, let's... We got to slow down against the United States.
Mr. President, thank you for taking great care of us. We can't thank you enough for pushing for what we have to have. So thank you on behalf of all of us here.
Thank you.
Guys, one final sign-off. All right, thanks to everybody who made that trip possible. And I hope those men and women stay safe. And they're at the tip of the spear. Now, your sneak peek of the week here in America. President Donald Trump set to return to the World Economic Forum's annual meeting in Davos. I don't know why I'm never invited. That should be fun. He'll be the big name guest. Former special counsel Jack Smith to testify publicly about his investigation into President Trump. I'm sure he'll make that a spectacle. And how about this? An oversight hearing is scheduled on housing affordability and saving the American dream. Who can't be for that? I'll be sure to watch. In sports, the college football national championship game is Monday. That's tomorrow. Miami versus Indiana. Indiana comes in favored. And next weekend, NFL conference championships at stake, a trip to the Super Bowl. That's it for us tonight. I want you to listen to my radio show Monday through Friday, 9 to noon. Got some great guests like Vice Admiral Robert Horwood, former Maine Governor Paul LePage, and join me on Fox and Friends in just a few hours. I promise to shower. I promise to change. And as always, two messages for you. Stay within yourself, and whatever you do, keep it here on Fox News. Let's work. Don't so firm on your attitude. Girl, you gotta
relax. Starting a business can seem like a daunting task, unless you have a partner like Shopify. They have the tools you need to start and grow your business. From designing a website to marketing to selling and beyond, Shopify can help with everything you need. There's a reason millions of companies like Mattel, Heinz, and Allbirds continue to trust and use them. With Shopify on your side, turn your big business idea into... Sign up for your $1 per month trial at shopify.com/special offer.